Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more, in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store or Lowe's.com for details.
This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage in our fifth segment of the trial of Alex Murdaugh. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage in this case. Let's head to the courtroom.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Special Agent Rudofsky, a couple matters I have up on the screen. This is from your cast slides from the defendant's trip coming back from Alameda. Is that right?
That is correct.
And going to this next slide, this is the trip. What was the max speed the defendant hit on this trip back from Alameda back to Moselle? Approximately?
I believe it was around 70. I'm sorry, the trip back to Moselle, that would have been around 80.
80?
Yep. The previous one was around 70.
Did the data while he was still at Alameda, did it reflect that the vehicle paused for a period of time in the driveway before continuing?
It did.
And would that pause affect that average speed that you calculated?
It would.
And that time?
It would.
I want to go to page 22 of your condensed timeline.
Okay.
Up at the top, tell the jury what time period the data reflects that Maggie Murdaugh's backlight was off.
It shows from 9:07 p.m. to 9:31:44 p.m.
And during the entirety of that time period, does the data reflect that her phone was also locked?
It does.
Could turn to page 18. Page 19, my apologies.
Okay.
From 8:53 to 8:55, what does the data reflect? Any steps logged on Maggie's phone?
The data reflects Maggie Murdaugh's iPhone shows 59 steps logged.
Can the data tell who was holding that phone during that time period?
It does not, no.
If you could turn to page 39, please. At 10:20:08, what happens, if anything, on Paul's phone?
Paul's iPhone, it shows display on, screen auto lock.
Screen auto lock?
That is correct.
What is your understanding again of auto lock?
My understanding of auto lock, so the phone is already locked, but it's just an automatic feature that when the screen turns on, it just auto locks. It just logs it as auto locks even though it's already locked.
Could that be from not recognizing a face?
Either a face or, you know, pushing the button on the side, but yeah.
What's the next entry on your timeline after that screen on auto lock on Paul's phone at 10:20:08? Very next entry at 10:21:25.
Alex calls Rogan. So at 10:20:08, we have that screen on and auto lock, and at 10:21:25, Alex calls Rogan Gibson.
In preparing this timeline here today for the jury and for this investigation, what was your specific job with that timeline?
Specific job was just to take all the data that we collected throughout this whole investigation and put it in one concise document.
Synthesize it together in one timeline.
That is correct.
From multiple sources.
From multiple sources.
Provided to you by experts.
That is correct.
Thank you, Special Agent Rudolphson.
Anything further? there was some question was asked about peak speeds to and from Moselle. Did you look to see if he passed anyone on the way there or back?
What do you mean passed anyone? Like a vehicle?
Yes, that his car passed another vehicle on a two-lane road.
I don't know how I'd be able to tell that with this data.
So you don't know if a very fast peak speed was simply gunning it to pass another car?
I do not. But at that late night hour, I would think that'd be with, you know, the area, not a lot of people out.
But, I mean, that's just total speculation. You don't know if there's another car.
Just like yours is total speculation, right, that he passed someone.
That'd be correct.
Yep, I do not know.
Yeah. You don't know if there are any other cars out there to pass. You don't know if he was passing another car. You just don't know, do you?
I do not, just like with your first question.
And you also don't know why Paul's phone, the screen came on those two times at 10:18 and 10:20, do you?
I do not physically know.
That second time that the phone came on was at that moment, Alec was actually on the phone with John Marvin, correct?
At what time?
The second time that the phone came on, 10:20, and I believe it was 8 seconds.
So at 10:20 and 8 seconds, that's when we have the display on. And at 10:21:25, Alex calls Brogan.
And at 10, when the display comes on, at that very second, Alec Murdaugh was on the phone, his phone, with John Marvin, correct?
If you do the math, I believe so, correct.
And this was also during a period in which, according to his phone, he's walking around, though again, we don't know if he was walking that exact second. But it's during a period of steps,
during
correct?
A period, correct.
Walking around on the phone with John Marvin. No further questions, Your Honor.
I'm going to step down. From the state.
Your Honor, as discussed, we request a very brief recess for housekeeping matters.
All right, the housekeeping matters are noted. Any further witnesses by the state?
Not at this time, Your Honor.
State rests. But for housekeeping matters?
The housekeeping matters, and then, yes, at that point, the state would formally rest. Yes, sir. All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll have you go to the jury room for another break. Please do not discuss the case. So what type of housekeeping matters do you have?
I just wanted to do, as my practice is just one final exhibit check, make sure that there was nothing missed. It will just take a moment, Your Honor.
All right. Motion that we will make. I mean, perhaps we could do it while the jury's out, but then he can formally...
That's why I did it in the manner in which I did it. We'll do it that way.
Okay, thank you. As Your Honor knows, after the evidence is closed, if there's a failure of competent evidence tending to prove the charge in the indictment, then the defendant is entitled to a directed verdict. The court should consider only the existence or non-existence of the evidence and not its weight. In this case, Your Honor, the evidence is exclusively circumstantial, and in State v. Dent, the South Carolina Court of Appeals in 2021 explained that the standard to be applied when the state relies upon circumstantial evidence is that all of the circumstances must be consistent with each other, and when taken together, point conclusively to the guilt of the accused beyond a reasonable doubt. If their circumstances merely portray the defendant's behavior as suspicious, the proof has failed. Also, another legal doctrine that we would point out is mere presence at the scene of a crime without more is insufficient to constitute guilt. The reason I say that legal doctrine, Your Honor, is at most what the state has proven and offered of proof is that the defendant was at the kennels at 8:44. He misstated that he was there, or he lied about he was being down there. And that raises a level of suspicion, and that they have concocted a cell phone timeline to come up with a time of death without any actual evidence of time of death. And there is no direct and frankly circumstantial evidence presented that the defendant shot and killed his wife Maggie or son Paul. As the evidence established, the murderer would have had blood and biological material on him or her. The murderer would have had blood on his or her clothing. The murderer would have murder weapons. The murderer or murderers would have evidence of disposing of murder weapons on property or vehicle. And there's no evidence that Alec Murdoch had any of this. He had no blood from the brutal murder of his son Paul. He had no DNA from Paul on his clothing in an area where you would expect to find it if he had shot his son, which he did not. There's no GSR on his clothing or clothes that is inconsistent with Alec holding a shotgun for protection. The state has proven at most that he was at the kennels at 8:44 p.m. The state does not have proof of time of death. The state does only have proof of when the last time Paul and Maggie used their phones. Most importantly, and as I mentioned earlier, the law is clear, mere presence at the scene of a crime is insufficient to establish guilt. Although, to be equally clear, Alec Murdoch was not at the scene of the crime at the time his wife and son were murdered, and there's no evidence that he was. And for that reason, we move for a directed verdict.
Yes, sir. By the state.
Your Honor, looking at the evidence that's been presented by the state, first of all, without detailing every bit of evidence, there's been ample evidence of motive evidence presented in this particular case, the years of embezzlement and theft, and the exposure, very significant exposure that the defendant was facing as June the 7th approached, which includes the loss of a job, the loss of a career, the loss of his bar license, the loss of years of wealth, the potential to lose everything in his own words. You've heard evidence about a confrontation June 7th on those matters that very day, as well as the boat hearing that was upcoming and the effects that that would have. Also heard extensive evidence of the defendant's financial condition on that day as it moved forward. Also evidence, Your Honor, of his ongoing narcotics addiction and how those particular things were relevant to what was going on as it related to the victims. There's been evidence, and again, as Your Honor is aware, the evidence must be taken in the light most favorable to the state, that family weapons were used to murder Maggie and Paul. You've heard evidence from the defendant's own mouth about a missing shotgun, and of course we have extensive evidence about the missing blackout, that being the replacement gun. Of course, you've heard evidence that the defendant claimed that was missing at Christmas time, but there was evidence from Will Loving that that gun was present and being used, including at the side of the house as late as turkey season, just a couple months prior to the murders, and that from the firearms expert that the cases found around Maggie's body were cycled through the same weapon. The murder weapon cycled the same cases as weather cases that were found at the side of the house, consistent with what Will Loving testified, as well as at the shooting range across the street. You've additionally heard that the same exact brand and weight of ammo that was used to kill Maggie was found throughout the property, as well as the same buckshot and birdshot ammo as well. There's been evidence presented by the state as to the defendant's trip to Alameda and his interaction with Shelley Smith after the murders, as well as the bringing the raincoat in. Additionally, that he left and moved his dad's truck in the four-wheeler, and that the raincoat contained high levels of GSR. There's been evidence presented in this particular case inconsistent with the defendant's statements to law enforcement, multiple changes of clothes that particular day, as well as evidence from Blanca that the clothes that he was wearing in the Snapchat video were never seen again, as well as the fact that the earlier clothes that he was wearing were not seen either. You have evidence that the defendant claimed that he was unaware that Maggie was coming to Moselle, or he did not ask for that, but you've heard evidence from multiple sources, including a text message that he specifically asked the victim to be present on that day. Your Honor, he was found in possession of a shotgun that cannot be excluded as a murder weapon that also had Maggie's blood on it. And then, of course, Your Honor, we have extensive phone and other digital evidence, and I don't need to reiterate the last witness, but that's been presented from multiple witnesses and multiple sources of a timeline. The defendant, of course, claimed that he was never at the scene And the evidence shows, pursuant to the state's theory and reasonable inferences therefrom, that he was at the scene, contrary to what he told everyone who would listen. Just minutes, he's at the scene with the two victims, just minutes before, under the state's theory and a reasonable inference from the evidence, the victims were killed. Additionally, his conduct in the timeline after that, there's a number of reasonable inferences about that that are consistent with the defendant's guilt. And to summarize a month's worth of evidence, that is the summary. I'm happy to address the timeline more, but I know that Your Honor just heard it in great detail.
There's a motion for directed verdict that's made at the end of the state's case. The court is concerned with whether there is any evidence, either direct or circumstantial, which reasonably tends to prove the guilt of the accused, or from which the guilt of the accused may be fairly and logically deduced. In this case, we have had is it day 20 now? I guess 18 days of direct and circumstantial evidence. And the law makes no distinction between the weight or value to be given either direct evidence or circumstantial evidence. Nor is a greater degree of certainty required of circumstantial evidence than of direct evidence. Cases can be proven by direct evidence, circumstantial evidence, or a combination of the two. At this stage of the proceedings, there's evidence to support a guilty verdict if it is believed by the jury. I therefore deny the motion for a directed verdict. Ready to roll with the defense?
Rock and roll, Your Honor.
Rock and roll. All right, well, let's take a 30-second stretch and bring the jury out and press on. And let's see, you can bring the jury. You may bring the jury. There you go. Be seated, please. Very good. Madam Forelady. How's the jury doing? Doing good. Very good. You have heard the state's case. It is now the defense's turn. And you may call your first witness.
All right. Coroner Richard Harvey, please. Yes. Go look. Thank you. I'm sorry. You know what you look like? Okay, good.
Do you swear or affirm any testimony you give today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
I do.
You would, sir, be seated. State your full name for the record. Spell the last part.
Okay.
And before we begin testimony, I think Mr. Waters, you're going to formally rest.
May it please the court, Your Honor. In the matter of the indictments of the defendant Alec Murdoch for the murders of his wife Maggie and his son Paul, the state of South Carolina rests.
And the state is rested, and now it's the defense's turn.
State your full name for the record, please.
My name is Richard Harvey.
And Mr. Harvey, you are an elected official here in Colleton County?
Yes, sir. I am the coroner of Colleton County.
Okay, and briefly describe your duties to the jury so they understand what a coroner does.
We basically investigate any death that occurs outside a hospital, any death that dies within 24 hours of admission to the hospital, any emergency room death is reported to the coroner's office as well. And primarily our responsibility is to do an investigation as to the cause of their death, including medical records, autopsies, and that's basically my responsibility is to determine what the cause of death and the manner of death is.
So, you don't have a medical degree, though?
No, sir.
Okay.
But I was one of the first medically trained coroners in the state of South Carolina.
Okay. And how long have you been coroner?
This is my 30th year.
30th year. So let me talk a little bit about in general. Well, no, let me just go ahead and cut to the chase here. You have a file with you, and I believe it's a file concerning the deaths of Paul and Maggie Murdaugh.
I do.
And how did you get notified of their deaths?
I was actually notified by one of my deputies who was on call that evening. And any time there's a homicide along that lines, in most cases, I attend those. And he was on call, and basically he told me he also has another job because he's only part-time. And he told me, he says, look, I can't stay. He says, I've got to work tomorrow morning. He says, you know, I hate to dump this on you, but he says, but, you know, this is going to be yours.
So first, let me back up for just a second. Did you respond? And if so, what time did you get to the scene? And I'm going to lead you and say in Moselle.
I was notified at 2304, which is 1104 in the evening.
Okay.
And I arrived on the scene let me back up there. I arrived on the scene at 2304. I was actually notified about 2230 by my deputy who was on call.
So 2230 would be 1030?
Yes, sir.
So you got notified at 1030, you got on the scene at?
At 1104.
And were you by yourself?
Yes.
Okay, and I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. Did you process this scene? Did you take photographs or something?
Yes, sir, I did.
So the photographs in your file,
yes,
are
sir.
Your photographs?
Yes, sir.
And in taking those photographs, did you, for instance, go into the feed room and take some photographs?
I did.
Okay. And had that crime scene been processed by SLED at that point?
No, sir.
Okay. Did you do anything to, and I'll be frank with you, there's some footprints that have been identified as law enforcement or perhaps your folks that were in the feed room, perhaps in blood, before SWED had finished processing. Are those your folks or SWED or who do you know?
I'm unaware of those.
Okay. So when you took those photographs, did you take precautions how do you not disturb evidence?
We've always kind of followed a pattern that we follow the same path in and the same path out. Therefore, we don't cross over into any possible assailants.
Okay. And again, you're preserving evidence. It's a homicide, so this is
correct.
Your case, right? And you do that pursuant to state law.
Yes, sir.
And we've received your photographs. Thank you for those. And I think you gave them to SWED also, correct?
Yes, sir.
And so you perform a function also. I've looked at the death certificates of Paul and Maggie Murdaugh, and you have a time of death of 9:00. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so let's go through when you begin to examine the body to determine the time of death. Tell me how you do that.
Well, initially that evening, when I initially got there, I was told that SLED was coming, which I knew, depending on where SLED was coming from, it depends. It could be an hour, it could be 2 hours. It all depends on what part of the state and what group is actually coming to you. My initial processing was that I went and checked both bodies. And I simply put my hands in their armpits to determine how warm they are. This is one of the things we do sometimes to try and estimate a time of death. Is the body cold? Is the body warm? And one of the other things we check for is what they call rigor. And rigor is basically when a person dies, the body goes through this process And as it goes through this process, your joints start to stiffen up. And when I initially got there, that was all I did initially because I knew sled was coming.
So is it Rigor or Rigor? I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
I call it Rigor.
I call it Rigor, but so I'll, if you allow me to say Rigor.
That's fine.
I've never said Rigor. Was there Rigor or Rigor?
There was not.
Okay, so these folks had been dead less than a couple hours?
1 to 3 hours typically is what they say that Rigor should start developing.
Okay, and in terms of trying to estimate or get it a little bit closer than 1 to 3 hours, you took your hand, show me what you did, and you did it both for Paul and Maggie?
Yes.
How about, could you step down here, please?
Sure.
And they were laying on the ground, both of them, right?
Yes, sir.
And did you move them?
No.
Okay, so...
They were covered with a sheet initially when I got there.
Right, so let's have you stand over
okay.
here so the jury can see me. And you went up to Paul, and where did you put your hand?
I have to think now which way Paul was laying.
I'm not worried about
right.
left
okay.
or right.
Basically what I did is I lifted his arm up just a little bit here, and I stick my hand up into the armpit. And that's one of the central areas of your body. Without using the only other choice is a rectal thermometer. And in most cases, when you have that many people around, I'm not going to pull somebody's pants down to utilize a rectal thermometer. So I stick my hands in their armpit, and like I say, I can get an idea, how warm they are.
Okay, and you did the same thing to Maggie.
I did the same thing
Go ahead,
to Maggie.
and you concluded... on your death certificate, 9 o'clock.
That's strictly an estimation.
That's a guess.
It's a guess.
Okay. Could have been 8:30.
Could have been 8:30.
Could have been 10 o'clock.
There are no witnesses there to tell me exactly what time this happened.
Do you carry a rectal thermometer to do specific measurements?
Well, usually what I'll do is I'll get it from fire rescue, the ambulance, and I'll borrow theirs. And yes, I do rectal temps.
But you didn't do it on that.
But we didn't do it that night. No.
And that's the reason the death certificate says 9 o'clock.
Right. That was an estimation from what I found as far as the warmth of the body.
Okay. Thank you, Court's indulgence. That we understand each other. Your statement of 9 o'clock, it could have been 8 o'clock.
It could have been 8 o'clock.
It could. Their deaths could have been the result of being shot at 8 o'clock.
I basically looked at 2.5 hours from the time that the call came in to the time I actually got there.
So they could have been shot at 10 o'clock.
Could have been.
Or any time in between.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Coroner. Please answer any questions.
By the state. Yes,
sir. Mr. Harvey, you did not use rectal or any sort of thermometer on that night.
No, sir.
And isn't it true that the best way to determine the actual time of death, particularly in a violent homicide, is to take the temperature?
Yes, sir.
Correct?
Yes, sir.
And the temperature decreases roughly at a rate of 1.5 degrees every hour.
Right.
Correct?
Correct.
And it's also affected by the ambient temperature in the
correct.
Area.
Correct. Yes, sir.
Yet, as I understand your testimony, correct me if I'm wrong, you really do not have a general idea as to when that incident actually occurred.
That's right. Yes, sir. That's true.
Because you didn't take the temperature, correct?
Right. And thermometers are not always accurate either. So, and that's one thing that we've learned over the years. I mean, we do have, and actually we now have the I can't think of ultraviolet light, the light that shoots for the forehead. Yeah. But what I've determined with that is that it's not necessarily accurate, is that I may shoot it at the forehead and it'll say 99 degrees, but if I shoot it in your ear, it might say 103.
That's right.
So, I mean, they're not necessarily accurate either.
That's correct. And it's also impacted by body weight.
Absolutely.
Correct?
Absolutely.
Age, elderly,
yes, sir,
versus youth, correct?
Yes, sir.
And the weather.
Yes,
correct?
Sir. Yes, sir.
If they were covered by
yes,
a sheet,
sir,
that which would...
Which they were at that time when I initially got...
That could maintain something?
Yes, sir.
If they got wet through rain, that mm-hmm. could affect it?
That could, yep, that could definitely...
And you had rain at that time, didn't you?
It had not rained hard at that point.
Both not
of their,
hard.
Both of their hairs were, heads of hair were dry.
Okay. And all those are factors which reflect what the actual time of death is.
Yes, sir.
Yet temperature is key.
Yes, sir.
And the only information you have is that the bodies were warm, correct?
Yes, sir.
Based upon
and
your...
Rigor had not started.
Yeah, and that usually begins to occur within 1 to 3 hours.
1 to 3 hours. So that's the time frame that I was looking at.
Okay. And you walked around the area, got close to them at that particular time.
Yes,
is
sir.
Is that correct? And you were walking in the scene, correct?
Yes, sir.
No further questions.
Yes, sir.
Two questions.
Sure.
Do you remember when Sled showed up?
I do. I do have probably the times for that. I did not see Sled on here, though.
Let me perhaps ask another question.
Okay.
Was Carlton County already there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Were there Carlton County detectives there?
Yes, sir. There.
Okay. Did any of them talk to you about time of death?
No.
Did any of them ask you what your examination revealed?
No.
Did any of them ask you how you came to your decision of the time of death?
No, sir.
Further.
Nothing further.
Thank you, sir. You may step down. Yes, sir.
Shailene Tyndall to the stand, please.
Yes, sir.
Do you swear or affirm that any testimony you give today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, ma'am.
If you would, please be seated. State your full name for the record. Spell your last name. And try to speak in that mic so they can hear you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
I'm Shailene Tyndall, Shailene Tyndall.
Talked on the phone a couple times?
Yes, sir.
But we've never met, have we?
No, sir.
Okay. I appreciate you being willing to come here on such short notice today. I know you've got other things to do. So, where do you work?
I work for the Gallatin Sheriff's Office as public information part-time, and then for my full-time position, I work for the nonprofit blood organization, the Blood Connection, as the divisional, logistics coordinator and calendar specialist.
Okay. My glasses, I'm sorry. So back on June 7th and 8th of 2021,
What was your job back then with the
company? I was solely the public information officer at the sheriff's office at that time.
Colleton County Sheriff's Office.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I want to show you a document and see if you can identify this. I think the easiest way to do that is, hold on 1 second, I'm sorry. Apologize, Your Honor, I've just gotten my two documents jumbled. Here we go. Have you seen this document before?
I'm aware of the Post and Courier publishing things of this nature, yes, but not strictly this document in question.
Okay, if you go to the second page. Now, does this, if you look halfway down the page, does that, there is a quote in here from you, correct?
Yes, sir.
Is it accurate?
This quote was actually coordinated between SLED and us at the time. We received multiple inquiries from the media, and per the sheriff's standard protocol, anytime SLED is in charge of a case or investigation, it's standard procedure to reach out to them and coordinate something with them.
Okay, so the quote from you, this is the Post and Courier on the morning of June 8th, and the quote contained by you in here, we'll get how that was put together, but is it accurate?
The quote wasn't by me, it was a joint information from SLED and the Sheriff's Office.
Sheriff Spokeswoman Shalane Lowe's referred questions. So, but you were part of the release of this statement?
Yes, it was a joint. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your Honor, I'd like to offer this in evidence.
No, ma'am. Could I look at it, please? Your Honor, I have no objection. We have no objection to the quote, but the article, I hadn't read the article. We just object to the rest of the article, and I think he's agreed with that.
I just want these two paragraphs to be on the record.
No objection to what?
To her quote that she gave and not the rest of the article. We're in agreement on that, if Your Honor is.
Is that what you're offering?
Yes, sir. I'm going to have her publish two paragraphs in this story. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
And for the record, Your Honor, this is a story in the Post and Courier on the morning of June 8th, which would be the morning after the murders. So what I'd ask you to do is, it's in quotes, would you read this paragraph and this paragraph, publish it to the jury. This paragraph at this time, and then the paragraph right after that, okay? Take it. And would you slow down just a little bit for me?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
At this time, there is no danger to the public, the sheriff's office said. If information is received that dictates otherwise, we will immediately notify the public. Sheriff spokeswoman Shalane Lowe's referred questions regarding the incident to SLED and the Colleton County Coroner's Office. A request for 911 audio recordings was denied due to the ongoing investigation.
What? I'm sorry, she went further than I asked. That's okay. All right, now, so that statement was the public has nothing to worry about, right?
That's what it states, yes, sir.
Okay, now, let me ask you the process for this getting something like this getting released. You said SLED was involved?
Can you clarify exactly what you're asking?
Okay, so this statement, at this time there's no danger to the public, the sheriff's office said, you would be the spokesperson for the sheriff's office?
Correct, but this was a joint statement released in coordination with SLED's PIO and us while we were waiting on an updated information to do an actual letterhead release.
Okay. So I guess what I'm saying is, on that, were you, who, did you release, were you the one making this release, or was Sled making, I mean, when I say, I'm talking about physically, how did the Post and Courier get this quote?
Sled and I, PAO at the time, coordinated multiple times through numerous phone calls. There's also emails. This was discussed over the phone due to them being the agency on the case. But it did come from my email, but it was coordinated with Sled's PIO at the time.
Okay, so Sled signed off on this statement?
From what I understand from speaking with their PIO at the time.
I mean, you consulted with their, now PIO stands for?
Public Information Officer.
Okay. So the Sheriff's Department has a Public Information Officer, you.
Yes,
sir. Sled has a Public Information Officer named?
At the time, I believe it was Tommy Crosby.
Tommy Crosby. Y'all talked and emailed?
On numerous occasions from the time of the incident on further.
And decided this was the statement that was that should be made?
When I coordinated with Sled's PIO, this is what was mentioned and this is what we had published.
Okay. And what you're saying is there's no danger to the public. If information is received that dictates otherwise, we'll immediately notify the public. Did you ever, was there a subsequent release given?
After this statement that we put out?
Right.
Yes, there was a joint letterhead release. The initial, what the Post and Courier published was an actual statement. Later on, we actually published a release while we were waiting on additional information.
And that subsequent statement didn't indicate there was any danger to the public. It didn't change this position, did it?
I'm sorry, could you repeat
did,
that?
Did Sled and Sheriff's Department change its position and put out a statement saying, whoa, now, there's something to worry about? Or did they just not mention this again?
When we did the updated release, that same information was also in the body that was sent over to Sled for their approval. Tommy Crosby had taken a moment to look at the release and later, I guess, decided that we took that out of the release and that it was what was published, excuse me.
So, but they never came back and said, there's something to worry about. They just took this language out.
Yes.
Okay. And Sled signed off on that.
We worked on this together, yes.
Okay, but it wouldn't have gone out if Sled hadn't said.
Yes, sir.
Let it out, correct? I mean, you get information and then you shape it into a release here or subsequently that is digestible. Maybe that's the best way to put it. You're the wordsmith. You're the one that tries to make it make sense.
Yes, sir. Public information, we're not privy to investigations. We just receive details and then we take those and turn them into paragraphs so the paper anywhere in the media can print for layman's terms to be better understood by the public.
And I want to make sure I understand this. Any subsequent release never changed. Actually, I think you said the subsequent release said the same thing. At this time, there's no danger to the public. That didn't change, correct?
In the updated release that was sent out on letterhead, yes, that was removed.
That was removed?
Yes, sir.
But did they say there is a danger to the public? They never said that, did they?
No, sir.
Take the court's indulgence for just a moment. Only one other question. In this story, your last name was Lowe's?
Yes, sir. I got married since then. I guess somebody decided to like me. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Please answer any questions.
Thank you, of course. I missed the last question. Did you get married?
Yeah, you sure trying to court me? No, I'm just kidding.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm happily married. I am not.
No, I'm just kidding.
I just couldn't hear. What was the date of the second release that Mr. Harpoon? I honestly don't know.
Am I talking into here?
Yes, ma'am.
The date of the second is the same date.
I apologize, Your Honor.
The date of the second.
The initial letterhead release was released on the same date a few hours after the initial statement.
So the one he was asking about second was the same exact
statement, word for word, that you was released early?
No, the second, the initial, what we initially put out at around, I think, before 10 o'clock in the morning, we had received inquiries from Fitz News, News 4, and I believe the Post and Courier. So the initial statement that I coordinated with SLED was the what he was referring to afterwards, an updated letterhead release as additional information became available to us was coordinated with SLED that redacted that information.
And I'm just going to show you.
Is this the document you're talking about here? And it's dated June 21st. Is that what you're talking about or not?
No, that is not.
Congratulations on your marriage. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you.
Anything further?
Did you think that Mr. Meadows was proposing to you a moment ago?
I don't know. I'm just picking.
No further questions. Thank you.
You may step down. Any additional witnesses today?
Your Honor, as we've discussed, the next witness would be extraordinarily lengthy. It's 4:30. I apologize to the jury and the court for not having somebody intermediate. We just couldn't find anybody, not knowing when the state was going to rest.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will adjourn for the weekend. As you know, Monday is a holiday. We will not be here on Monday. We'll be back 9:30. Tuesday morning. I know it's a long holiday, but still do not discuss the case with anyone. And hope have a safe and happy holiday and a good weekend. And we'll see you all on Tuesday morning at 9:30.
That wraps up segment number 5 in our continuing coverage of the trial of Alec Murdaugh, day 18. Of testimony on the 17th of February, 2023. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our courtroom coverage and discussions on this case. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.